Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection from Alaska Public Media here in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your co-host, Dr. Thad Woodard. All right, so a little bit of introduction for today's program. The United States, whether you know it or not, spends far more money per capita on health care than any other country in the world. And within the United States, Alaska has some of the highest health care costs. So today we thought we'd investigate some of the possible reasons for Alaska's high health care costs, and then also we need to really think about what the effects of those health care costs on all of us, and finally maybe discuss some possible solutions. Our guest is Cliff Groh. Cliff is chairman of the Alaska Common Ground. This is an Alaska nonprofit organization whose stated mission is to cultivate Alaska's common ground for government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And he does this, or they do that, by engaging a diverse group of citizens in active pursuit of informed mutual understanding and agreement on the vital issues of public concern. And in a series of get-togethers of the public, which we'll let you know about later and you can be involved in if you want to, they're tackling the whole issue of high health care costs. For the rest of this program, if you have questions or comments, let me tell you how you can reach us. Our local number in Anchorage is 550-8433, 550-8433. We also have a toll-free number, a little longer, 888-353-5752. And for regular listeners, you know you can get us through email. And that email address is line1. Spell that out, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at alaskapublic.org. Cliff, you and I have met a couple of times as you're trying to drag me further into this issue. Welcome to Line One and a chance to tell us a little bit more about these high health care costs. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Doctor, and I feel lucky to be here. I'm a lawyer and a writer and a lifelong resident of Alaska. I have long been interested in Alaska fiscal matters, and I have been writing and speaking about the issues of the state of Alaska's budget and taxes for more than 35 years. Healthcare spending is a big part of the state of Alaska's budget. Almost a third of the state of Alaska's budget is conventionally defined when you add up all the various categories.
Right. Well, let's just talk about that. If you spend one third of our income on healthcare, it strikes me my first question would be, there's a lot that we can't spend money on that maybe we should be spending money on. Well, education, infrastructure.
And a variety of other good things the government provides for its citizens and the residents, including public safety, hot topic of concern now. And across our country and in our state, there have been giant increases in healthcare spending in recent decades and in recent years. And one way of understanding this is that, as you said, the United States has by far the highest per capita healthcare spending of any country in the world, and Alaskan has the highest per capita spending of any state. And to put a number on it, the average Alaskan is responsible for more than $3,000 in healthcare spending, more than the average American is responsible for. So that's a way of understanding that we're the top of the top right here in our beautiful last frontier. Mm-hmm.
So another thought that comes to me is, you know, when I started up here, I noticed cost of food was more. Cost of transportation of food getting here was a big one. So as I thought about this program, and I don't know the answer to this, what are the margins, what are the profits of other businesses in Alaska compared to the lower 48? I mean, is the healthcare industry stand out by itself in this, or is this a more common phenomenon throughout the state?
Things generally cost more in Alaska than other places, although the differential is way less than it was when I was a boy growing up here in Anchorage in the 1960s.
That's a good point. Yep.
Or even when you arrived more than 35 years ago, right? That differential has shrunk between Alaska and the lower 48 in terms of general prices of things. The two things that stand out as really expensive here in Alaska are healthcare and traditionally oil, but of course, in terms of where money is, you know, the big money has been. But, of course, oil has been down recently, both in price and in production. Healthcare is the really bright spot in our economy, as it's often pointed out, but simultaneously, it's also frequently identified as the biggest barrier to the growth of Alaska businesses because healthcare costs so much more here mm-hmm. than in other places around the country.
Mm-hmm. And healthcare is definitely been a drag on all businesses throughout the United States because of our health care, but then it's even a bigger drag potentially here.
Correct.
And health care has become a huge benefit, whereas 35 years ago it may not have been thought of as a benefit.
I guess that's true partly, I suppose, of the aging of the population right. and the increasing use of technology and medicine and various procedures and medications that did not used to be available when you first started practicing medicine.
Right. All right. So I jumped ahead. I wanted to let you tell us a little bit about Alaska Common Ground. I've implied a little bit about what the Common Ground does, but I should let you tell us a little bit more.
Your description is exactly right. Alaska Common Ground is a nonpartisan and nonprofit organization. We're aimed at helping Alaskans understand the major issues facing our state and perhaps help people reach consensus or common ground on those issues. I personally have been a member of the board of Alaska Common Ground for more than 20 years, and I've been chair of that board for more than 3 years.
All right, so let's get back to costs. So we know healthcare costs are high. Insurance costs are high as well?
Correct. Well, Alaska Common Ground has mostly been studying healthcare costs more than the cost of health insurance. It appears that Alaska has the highest health insurance costs of any state in the country.
And you also mentioned, I think, that healthcare costs have been rising. I'm trying to put some perspective on this whole issue. So it's not only that they're high, but they are increasing. I know in the United States, I was looking at a paper by Uwe Reinhardt that we've listed on our website as a reference, and he was talking in 2000, it was something like 6 or 7% of gross national product, and it's now 17%. And is that true in Alaska too?
In 2016, the United States, the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid put the total health care spending at 17.9% of gross domestic product or GDP. Mm-hmm. And ICER director Ralph Townsend reported in October of 2017 the total health care spending in Alaska was 16.4% in 2014, which is apparently the last year for which the data was available on a state-by-state basis. I also want to point out that this has really changed a lot here in Alaska in the last 20 years. 20 years ago, in 1997, Alaska's per capita health care expenditures were lower than the United States per capita health care expenditures. Mm-hmm. But since 1997, our state has experienced a very high rate of growth, a rate of growth that is higher than any other state and much higher than that of the nation as a whole. And that's, you know, we just walked away from the country's already high and high per capita health care spending on obviously an international basis.
We have a caller. I'm going to take that call, Cliff, and then we'll come back to kind of see if we can flesh out some of the reasons why these rather amazing changes in healthcare costs have occurred up here. So, Stu, you're on line one. What can I do for you?
Well, I got a couple of questions. Here's a quick one. Should you consider a large advertising budget for your dentist or your medical office as a red flag? I mean, I know what it's like to get those bills. You know, I get the free medical doctor visit because of my insurance, and then they hit me with all those tests. But then I'm sitting here watching TV, and they're running a commercial every 20 minutes, and I'm thinking, God, am I paying for that?
Right.
Okay, that's one question. I have another question, too. I'll ask after that if I have a chance.
Okay. Stu, yes. If you see a lot of spending on advertising, and also if you see very fancy offices of a doctor or a dentist or a hospital, you need to understand that that's getting paid for some way. The writer and Dr. Elizabeth Rosenthal has pointed out that hospitals in Europe, where healthcare costs are very substantially lower than in the United States, in Europe, the hospitals tend to look like high schools. In the United States, hospitals are increasingly beginning to look like luxury spas, as are high-end medical practices. If you walk in and see frosted glass, granite marble tops, and, you know, other exquisite furnishings and expensive looks, you should think really clearly about whether this is the right place for you to go.
Yeah, I suspected that was the case. Here's another question. I have insurance but would like to do business with a dental or medical office that takes, Medicaid or Medicare, I get them confused, in case I lose my insurance in the future, and hopefully I might be able to stick around and still get services. How do I find a list of offices that take Medicaid? I went and asked one dentist. They said, oh, no, we don't take that. So I kind of blew them off. And if people did that, would that help lower cost if they cater to businesses that, you know, help the old folks that don't have the same insurance that us working folks have?
I don't know. It's a good question, Stu. I don't know if there's a list compiled of which physicians or providers' offices take Medicare or Medicaid and which don't. I will tell you, after interviewing more than 20 physicians or surgeons for this series, that it's hotly controversial among various physicians and surgeons, and they'll say, well, I take Medicare and Medicaid, and that other provider does not, and even if they're in network and insurance. I do think that's a good question, and I will actually explore that question of whether there's a list.
Yeah, I would love to figure out. You know, I'm looking for a new dentist. My great dentist just retired. And he's got the marble tops at the desk and stuff. And it wasn't, you know, somebody else on the office. But one other question. Could you talk about the fraud that occurred in the Muldoon Dental Office where they were using general anesthesia for the Medicaid folks and the private insured folks weren't getting ripped off like that? I mean, I'm very concerned about that. I actually went to that dentist for a while. And so are people on Medicaid more likely to be subject to fraud like that?
I have no comment on that. I have not studied that case. I do know that there can be fraud. There can also be waste. There's an old line in politics. I think it might apply here. What's often the biggest scandal is not just what's illegal, but what's legal. And people need to think about that clearly when thinking about the overall topic of healthcare spending.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not aware of that issue either, so I can't make any comment. But before you hang up, let me give you. My office is the Alaska Center for Pediatrics. It's 777-1800. And Stu, if you want a list of Medicaid dentists that take Medicaid, if you will call that number, tell them you heard me on the radio, and that you would like that list, we will get it to you.
Thank you very much. Great show, guys.
I can't do it on the Medicare side, but I can do it on the Medicaid side.
Yeah, well, I get them too confused. I'm too young for that anyhow.
Okay,
777-1800. Thanks a lot.
You betcha.
Bye, Stu.
All right. So let me give our contact number again before we get back into this. If you're listening today, our guest is Cliff Groh. We are talking about the high cost of healthcare in Alaska. We're working through some of the facts that make it somewhat clear that we have a unique situation as far as the cost, the rising cost, the percentage of total income in the state that healthcare costs are taking up. And we're going to move on to some possible reasons and then discuss some possible answers. If you've got questions or comments, this is the way you get a hold of us in the next 45 minutes or so. Our local number, 550-8433, 550-8433. Our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. And we also have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. All right. So, Cliff, you've made a very good point that our healthcare costs have accelerated relative to everything else, even though we are an expensive state. It's increasingly taking up a bigger bite of what we can use our money for, and so other services are suffering because of this. So let's talk about some reasons. I think it's probably time to get into that. So give me some ideas that you've learned and heard about, and maybe we'll dissect those for a little bit or chew on them.
That'd be great. Let's first start with the basic facts that the federal data show that the extra costs for Alaska and healthcare spending over the national average are concentrated overwhelmingly in two categories. And those two categories are number one, hospital care, and number two, physician and clinical services. Those are the two big categories for the extra spending. And by the way, although a lot of people want to talk about pharmaceuticals, and they are very expensive in our country, relative to the prices in other countries. It's not a big factor in Alaska's extra healthcare spending. Per capita prescription drug costs are actually lower in Alaska than the national average. Hmm. Now, in terms of reasons, this is more speculative, but when I interview people and read the literature and the studies, the factors that get listed are things like the hospital margins in urban Alaska are several times higher than the national average. The hospital margins in Anchorage are about three times the national average of hospital margins. It's also difficult for one of the reasons for that apparently is that it's hard for hospitals to find in some cases appropriate places to discharge people. And so there's sort of a hole where there's a relative shortage in Alaska of beds at facilities with skilled nursing and other behavioral health centers would allow some people to avoid the really expensive hospital stays. Some people are kept for months and months and months in hospitals in Alaska, where in Pennsylvania or New York or California or Arizona, they would be discharged with another more appropriate facility would be substantially cheaper. There's also apparently limited competition and or leveraging of market power by some medical providers, particularly procedural specialty physicians such as orthopedic surgeons, neurosurgeons, and cardiologists. And that apparently keeps their prices or fees higher than they would be otherwise. And the top for compensation is quite high in our state. One neurosurgeon, for example, more than tripled his income by moving north. He made $1.5 million in Washington State in 2007. He moved to Alaska, and he made $5.5 million in Alaska in 2009, almost four times as much. But I also want to point out simultaneously that especially for physicians that don't do procedures, are appearing, on the other hand, to make incomes more in line with the lower 48, and some financial practitioners seem to be struggling financially. So it's not like that all doctors make an enormous amount of money in Alaska versus the lower 48. I do think that some do, particularly among certain kinds of surgeons.
So let's flesh this out just a little bit more. Let's talk about hospital care and the reasons you mentioned, and then we'll come back to physician services. And then I've got put down while you're writing a little comment about some other things I've read about reasons for some of our high health care costs in the United States in general, and see if they apply here. But you mentioned that maybe the margins or the profits, I take that to mean, of hospitalists because they don't have anywhere to discharge somebody that would be cheaper to take care of them.
That's part of it. There are also other factors, it seems to me, that the hospitals in Anchorage particularly just make very high margins. We say margins and not profits because the biggest hospital in Anchorage, of course, is a nonprofit.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I guess to me, when I think about it, is they can't move them out into a less expensive area of care. I'm not sure how that affects profit necessarily. They're getting,
If you ask their CEOs, and I've interviewed CEOs of hospitals, they will point to things like, well, hey, Cliff, construction costs are higher in Alaska than in the lower 48. Right. You gotta, in part because you gotta worry about earthquakes. You have to have like extra seismic protection.
Insurance is higher. Yeah, I understand, but the profit is.
I understand, but I mean, I'm saying that the reasons that are sometimes offered don't seem to fully explain those high margins, Doctor. But we're having an event, actually, to explore that even more coming up, just actually on Wednesday evening, December 13th, this Wednesday evening. At where we're going to discuss this, we'll have a hospital CEO, a number of physicians, the state director of insurance, and other knowledgeable people in the healthcare field actually talk about this on the stage, and the audience could ask questions.
All right, tell us some more about that since you're bringing it up.
Absolutely.
We'll do it again later.
But absolutely.
This is a chance for people to get there and hear and make comments.
And ask their questions. On Wednesday evening, December 13th, Alaska Common Ground is holding an event on the causes of Alaska's high healthcare costs. And this event will be at the 49th State Brewing Company at 717 West 3rd Avenue in Anchorage. It'll run from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Wednesday evening. And it'll have a variety of people on the stage to talk about this very important issue. They'll question each other. The audience will ask questions. And I think this will be an illuminating event for some of the questions we're obviously talking about during this hour, Doctor.
You mentioned then about physicians, and if I'm saying this correctly, please correct me if I'm wrong, that certain physicians are making an income that is inordinately out of range with other similar physicians in other parts of the country, and particularly those, you mentioned the word procedures. So
correct.
As I heard, some physicians are maybe even struggling. Some who don't do procedures are more in line with the rest of the country, but physicians who are doing procedures is where I heard you say things are out of line. Could you explain that?
The big money in Alaska tends to be in the fields of orthopedic surgery, neurosurgery, and cardiology are three of the biggest fields for where the incomes appear to be substantially out of line in terms of the studies of what they would be in the lower 48. Particularly, perhaps the highest you keep hearing is the category of spinal surgeons who appear to make 5 to 10 times as much in Alaska as they do in the lower 48. But in general, there are people who cut, I mean, physicians who cut or do procedures with their hands or with machinery tend to be the ones with the very high differentials versus the lower 48, whereas doctors who don't do, who are specialists but do more evaluation and management, such as rheumatologists or neurologists, do not have incomes as much as out of line with the lower 48. And some family practitioners and general practitioners are not, you know, their incomes are not way out of line with the lower 48, and some actually seem to be, as I said, financially struggling.
Where do fees come from? How are fees set in the private sector in the physician realm? What happens there?
One neurosurgeon said he moved to Alaska and he said, "Hey, Cliff, I just looked at what workman's comp paid. And then I just started charging that. That was how I picked my initial fees, and that reimbursement was way higher than I was making back in the lower 48. And I do think that you've identified another factor that's sometimes discussed that's a feature of law. There was an Alaska regulation adopted in 2004 that's still on the books that established something called the 80th percentile rule. And that's a rule that applies to medical provider reimbursement that critics say has helped drive up healthcare spending in Alaska by giving some specialist physicians much more bargaining power in setting their fees. And so that's been named as a factor along in an interrelated way with another feature of Alaska state law, which are statutes adopted in the 1990s that appear to make it more difficult to rely on managed care in Alaska to hold down costs. Managed care is a concept that is, you know, very controversial, but in the lower 48 has sometimes seemed to hold down costs. It's really difficult because of these laws to make it work in Alaska.
So with the 80% rule, so that listeners can understand, you tell me if I'm wrong here. So there, let's say I'm a orthopedic surgeon, just pick one that you've picked, and there may not be a lot of orthopedic surgeons, or they may have grouped up so that there's not a lot of competition, so that they can raise the fees, and then insurance companies have to pay 80% of that, but there's nothing to keep them from raising that fee. There's no competition, therefore prices keep going up.
Traditionally, there's been limited competition, and it's called the 80th percentile rule, not the 8%. So at the 80th percentile, the state regulation tends to require payment at the 80th percentile, and when you have limited competition, it tends to drive up the rates because people can keep raising their rates if there's more limited competition. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that there are some indications, at least anecdotally, that this may be changing somewhat this year.
Right.
And some providers that have traditionally held out from going into network with in insurance networks have now gone into network, including some in the orthopedic surgery field here in
right.
Anchorage.
Yeah, it seems like to me. I just heard an advertisement just the other night that one of the maybe the largest orthopedic group has begun to go on network with maybe for essentially all the insurance companies.
But that's been effective in the last 6 weeks, doctor.
Yeah,
so this has been a very recent trend.
Yeah. How about price transparency is an issue? You can go and get online and see what it's going to cost you to have a hotel room anywhere in the world, and it's going to be guaranteed pretty much. And if you go, including my office, unfortunately, I can explain why it can be difficult from my standpoint, but it's hard to get answers to how much my surgery is going to cost. They start asking you, well, where's your insurance and who's doing this and where are you going to do it?
One of the reasons this problem is so difficult to address, doctor, is that we have a complex and multifaceted problem. And one of the aspects of the problem is that the system for reimbursement is so complex and multifaceted, as you've alluded to. There's a variety of payers. People end up paying it. Some people write checks out of their own checking account to pay for their medical care. Mm-hmm. Some have private insurance companies. Some have government-funded care in some way. And the providers, the doctors in the hospitals and the nurse practitioners, often tend to set different prices for different payers, not just different procedures. So it tends to become very complicated here in the United States, and that's one of the reasons why it's been difficult to, this problem's been difficult to address, and probably one of the big reasons that it's been created.
We got a couple of callers. I need to take our halftime break here in just a second, but I do want to comment on my comment of why, from my point of view, why it's difficult. I ask our office administrator, why can't we make our prices exactly transparent? And the answer is, well, you know, when you come in, you think you've got a little foreign body in your nose, but it turns out you also are infected, and then you want to talk about some other problems, and so it's very hard, and so people walk out and say, well, wait, you charged me a heck of a lot more than what you told me it was going to be on. So a lot of times what happens in the doctor's office, it may not even be what the doctor thinks you're here for when they walk in. So there's a lot of reasons for the transparency issue. I agree, but it seems like to me, nevertheless, it's some area we need to be working a little bit harder to make work. All right, I need to take a break. I want to remind everybody you're listening to Line 1, your health connection. Our local number again is 550-8433. Our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. Our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll continue our discussion on high healthcare costs in Alaska with Cliff Groh. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1 on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Line 1, your health connection from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. With me today is Cliff Groh. Cliff is chair of the Alaska Common Ground, an Alaska nonprofit whose mission is cultivating common ground by engaging Alaskans in the active pursuit of informed mutual understanding and agreement on vital issues such as the high health care costs. The issue today is high health care costs of Alaskans, and you can email your questions to us at line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us if you're local at 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And please remember, if you're listening between 8 and 9 p.m. on Monday evening, you're listening to a taped recording, and we will not be available to answer calls and emails. Cliff, tell us a little bit more, or once again, about the meetings that Alaska Common Ground is putting on, particularly the one this Wednesday, but also go ahead and mention the subsequent ones as well, if you don't mind.
Absolutely, Doctor. On this Wednesday evening, December 13th, at the 49th State Brewing Company, we'll have on the stage seven panelists and a moderator and assistant moderator, a lot, nine people. But in alphabetical order, the panelists are Dr. Alan Gross, an orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Robert R.J. Hall, an orthopedic surgeon who's a leader at the state's largest group of orthopedic surgeons, Bruce Lamoureux, who's the senior vice president and CEO at Providence, Alaska Region, the CEO of Alaska's largest hospital, Jennifer Myhoff, who's the legislative co-chair of Alaska Society of Health Underwriters, Dr. Stanley Watkins, who's a cardiologist, who's a leader at the largest cardiology practice in Alaska, Lori Wing Heyer, who's the director of the Alaska Division of Insurance, and Charles Woolforth, an author, a broadcaster, and a columnist, who's written more than a dozen columns on this issue of high healthcare costs in Alaska. And financial analyst Mark Foster will assist me as moderator. This is not the last event in Alaska Commons Grounds series on the issue of high healthcare costs in Alaska. Alaska Common Ground will also hold two events in January on potential solutions regarding this issue. On Wednesday evening, January 10th, we'll talk about some of the more technical solutions about Alaska's healthcare costs. And then on January 24th, another Wednesday evening, we'll also talk about some more sweeping potential changes that would address Alaska's high healthcare costs. All of Alaska Common Grounds events in the series are at the Fort Anne State Brewing Company. They're free. There's a suggested $10 donation to our nonprofit organization.
Okay. So if you have interest in being heard or hear more about it, this Wednesday night, 7 to 9 at the Brewing Company, at the 49th Street Brewing Company, from 7 to 9 p.m., they're going to be discussing some possible reasons with a very good group of individuals who have a lot to say about those reasons. All right, let's take a couple of calls. We have three waiting, a couple of emails. See if we can get these done and then get back to some possible solutions. So, Julie, you're on line one.
Hello, this is Julie.
Yep, what can we do for you?
So I've got three quick points, and I'll take my response offline. First of all, do you realize that Alaska is actually importing seniors due to its taxation structure? The exemptions that are provided to senior citizens in Alaska are some of the highest in the nation. As a result, I would think that the cost for services for Medicare and Medicaid would be significant. It's actually been proven out that the cost associated with the exemption program bring seniors to Alaska, which will conversely drive up the cost of those programs. Second point, have you done a comparison between the for-profit hospital in Alaska, Alaska Regional, and Providence Hospital, and done a review of Providence Hospital and how the Alaska section in Anchorage specifically is actually exporting capital to its other organizations throughout the United States because of the incredibly high costs. Those are all tax-exempt organizations. It's a significant effect. And finally, you made a comment earlier about transparency of medical costs. Recently, the Anchorage municipality made it a requirement that medical providers post costs. So I would be curious if your panel has any comments on any of those three points. Right. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call, Julie. Cliff, you want to take these?
I think that the question about the comparison between the hospitals or among the hospitals in Anchorage is a good question to come and ask the CEO of one of them, who's appearing on our panel on our stage on Wednesday evening, December 13th, at Fort Nancy Brewing Company. On transparency, there has been an ordinance recently passed in Anchorage, obviously not throughout the state. It's just recently been passed. It's a little tricky to tell the effects. One argument I heard from one hospital executive was that doesn't really do a lot to have the transparency under that ordinance to help the patient, because the patient is often really looking for is not so much the posted price, but sort of the best deal on a price, which would not be shown as much. But I do think that transparency can be effective, and we need to look and see what effects it does have in Anchorage.
What about the comment Julie made about importing seniors? I've not heard that point. Do you have any reason to think that's true? There are more seniors coming here because of their advantages?
Traditionally, we have a very low absolute number, a low percentage of senior citizens in Alaska, from the days of territory to statehood, but it's a fast-growing population. I've sometimes heard that Alaska has the fastest-growing population of senior citizens. I don't know about importing. I'm thinking that part of the reason it grows is growing is because some people are not leaving as much as they used to in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, the way they used to when I was a kid. Hard to tell the sort of relationship between the government benefits or subsidies and the actual effects on the population.
Okay. We had an email asking about saying that we've discussed physician payments and keeps referring to studies. Where do you get the data? They'd like to look at it themselves. Is there particular sources that you might mention?
The state of Alaska has put out some information about this recently, and then there was a study performed by a consulting company called Milliman, and it's dated November 1st, 2016. That was done for an insurance company, Primera. And then there was an earlier one in 2011 that also looked at this issue, done by the same company called Milliman. I'm thinking if you ask Primera, they would give you a copy of it.
Yeah, I have it's a link at alaskapublic.org. If you go to the line one, we also got the UAA, Institute of Social and Economic Research in Alaska Healthcare Costs. So there's a link there about that data. I don't have a link to those other comments that you had. All right, let's take another call. Bill, you're on line one.
Yeah, another good show. Thanks. Anyway, I just turned 65. I have a long-term cancer thing, and I went got some surgery here, some pathology reports. I ended up flying to Seattle, and I saw an oncologist down there, and it was real good. But the point is that since I turned 65, I was told, you know, for years that, oh, God, when you're on Medicare, you can't find a doctor. I have not found that to be the case. So that is single-payer Medicare, is it not?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So what's the big deal that we say in this country that we can't go to single payer? You know, in other words, and also there was a woman that's a psychiatrist that gave a thing on 360 North on television a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. She mentioned one fact, and then I'll hang up after this. She said that there was a $500 billion administrative fee through the insurance companies whose CEOs are making $40,000 a day, and that if we took that money and put it towards paying health care in America, we'd have it solved. Okay, so what I want to know is, what is the big deal? The military, God bless our vets, they have the VA, that's single payer. If you don't have enough money for insurance of your kid, you get, you know, Alaska Denali Care or whatever, kid care, that's single payer. What is the big fear in your mind, Cliff, of people? And the last comment is, I could lose my house if I can't pick my medical bills. Not many other countries you can do that. And if you don't mind, I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
All right. Great question.
Sure, Bill. Health care in our country is complex, controversial, and emotional. And we're going to have a session on Wednesday evening, January 24th, where we will be talking about some of the sweeping or more, let's call it comprehensive proposals to address high health care costs that would include single payer and other proposals in that category, such as the creation of an Alaska State health care authority. Let's just say that there are some various political and technical factors that have made some of the proposals you've discussed harder to adopt in our country. We'll have a thorough airing of those, it seems, to on Wednesday evening, January 24th.
Yeah, I would say, and again, I'm trying to be very careful. I don't want to say things that aren't true, but generally it seems to me that people who have Medicare are quite happy with their coverage. I have not seen the same thing for Medicaid. And if you want to know more about single payer, in the archives of Line 1, again, go to alaskapublic.org, Line 1 archives. We interviewed the CEO of Physicians for a Single Payer Healthcare System. It was a great program, and you can get more information about the pros and cons of single payer insurance from that interview. Again, about an hour long. Probably was in the last 18 months to 2 years that we did that. Another email says that they were listening to Line 1 several years ago. They listened to an eye surgeon. They were asking why the cost for a LASIK surgery was so much up here, and the response was, we charge what the market can bear. And the writer goes on to say that we live here in Alaska. We're separated from the lower 48, cannot easily avail of our services with other states. That might be more competitive, and that probably explains why we pay a lot. Cliff, what do you think about that logic?
I will say that there are very substantially higher costs here in Alaska, particularly for some procedures. One example I recently highlighted is an example brought out by a family from Homer, where the cost of a hip replacement surgery in Seattle, the all-in cost, was less than half of what it would have been in Anchorage. And the biggest factor was not the fee of the orthopedic surgeon, but the facility fee for the hospital. And so I think for major procedures or surgery or treatments that are non-emergency, right? If you get into a car wreck, you might need a lot of medical care right away, and you can't, you know, sort of dicker or bargain where you're going to go. But for me, for important and procedures and treatments and surgery, people should look very carefully at the costs if they have a little time to research it in various places and think carefully about costs and outcomes.
Another question that comes in by email is, what effect does malpractice have on the higher health care costs? So there's two questions there. Do physicians have to pay much more higher malpractice, and are they practicing more defensive medicine, therefore costing patients more money?
I'm not aware exactly of the cost of malpractice insurance for medical providers in Alaska versus other states. I've had it suggested to me that it's higher. I don't think it's five times as high in Anchorage as it is in Seattle, would be my distinct impression. I would say, though, that as a lawyer, I'm aware, although I've never practiced in this area, that there have been a number of changes in Alaska law since I became a lawyer that have made medical malpractice lawsuits more difficult to win and less profitable for patients as compared to providers. So it strikes me that blaming all this problem entirely on medical malpractice insurance would not be a reasonable explanation.
Yeah, I keep thinking about it. I guess the simple economics is your profit, which you said is very high for some, is whatever your income is minus your expenses. So the malpractice costs can't be that high if they're really making a heck of a lot
right.
more than everybody else. Even if it's high, it's not the most important factor in at least the high earners in the healthcare. They're making up for it plus extra. Matthew, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I currently have the Veterans Affairs, like healthcare. They take care of me. And anytime I have any sort of issue, all I need to do is call them, and they give me a referral to go see a specialist and do anything. And it's a dream. They take care of everything, the cost. And it's just amazing. And it's single-payer health care, so how come we don't just do that? Because everything else just seems like it's just beating around the bush, short-sighted, and it's leaving people out in the cold until we're able to have single-payer health care. Any other solution just seems bad. Bye.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. It makes me think of perception versus reality. I think there's a perception that the VA healthcare system is not good. At least that's what I hear. However, I don't know that much about the VA healthcare system, so I can't comment. However, I can say that I'm struggling all the time with electronic medical records, and we are constantly trying to get more interactive, better, more efficient, at least for the physician standpoint. And I have heard that the VA's has got the best, by far, electronic medical record system going. And I wish we had something similar from what I've been able to hear. So, again, I think there's a lot of misperception about single-payer quality that may be, well, it drives everything we do. We all, as humans, we make bad mistakes based on poor information a lot of times, and I think it behooves us to keep asking ourselves, could we be wrong about what we believe, and where do we get the best information to make better decisions about things? So thanks for your call. Where are we? Oh, I have one comment I wanted to say about costs. And years ago, I was looking at a New England Journal of Medicine article, and they were asking, you know, why is our healthcare cost going up in this country so much? And the common answer is, you know, end-of-life care, which turned out not to be a very good answer. But one thing they brought up, which was one of the driving factors, and the cost of the administration of health insurance was a big part of this. It was somewhere around 25%, and again, I don't want to overstate this, of the health care costs. So that's a huge thing that single payers don't have and other countries may not fight with. But the other one was the new cost of new technology, new scanners, new MRI, but particularly we're making tremendous advances in immunotherapy for cancers and so forth, which are very expensive situations that are, and in this analysis, that was one of the big drivers that we often don't think about and has not been mentioned on the program so far.
I think that's correct, although it's not as though the United States has a monopoly on all the best medical technology in the world. Other countries have a lot of very good medical technology available to the patients, like France or Japan, or Germany, Switzerland, that have way lower healthcare spending per capita than the United States does, and especially obviously than Alaska does. I will say that you've, in a way, identified one of the important issues here. The healthcare spending is a factor of two things: the prices. Right, the charges of the hospitals, the physicians, the surgeons, the nurse practitioners, times the utilization.
Right.
Right. One doctor was asking various other doctors here in Alaska, how can we hold down healthcare costs in Alaska? And one of the answers he got from a number of people was, stop ordering so many tests. Okay. And that one of the factors here in Alaska is that certain kinds of procedures and tests seem to be reimbursed at a higher level than other states. So as a result, there's even a bigger incentive for those doctors, surgeons, hospitals that own certain kinds of equipment to use them even more. In terms of some people, maybe MRIs are given at a higher rate in our country than some other countries, not just because it helps provide a better medical outcome, but also because it provides a source of income for the entity that owns the MRI machine.
I would go further than that, Cliff. I would say there is significant evidence that more health care is not necessarily lead to better health. And that may seem very strange, but many studies show that socioeconomic factors, environmental factors, are more important for the contribution of health than health care. Health care is only a small portion of what goes on in contributing to people's health. And when you look at it like that, we seem to be in love with more health care rather than some of the social and environmental issues that contribute to health.
I agree that if I was going to give advice to people, I was one doctor. Remember, I interviewed more than 20 doctors and more than 40 people total for this. And one doctor said, Cliff, the best advice I have is to understand that the best way to deal with the healthcare system is to avoid interacting with it, right? And so the best thing is to take care of yourself, right?
Right, or so, be more selective in how you use it for.
My point is that you need it less, right? If you exercise more, watch your diet more, try to keep your weight down and avoid some negative health factors, well-known negative health factors like smoking tobacco or drinking substantial amounts of alcohol, you can reduce your need for healthcare services. That will help you a lot. But it's also true that just because you're hurting, like for example, I fell on the ice this morning, like a lot of people, as I told you when we walked in, and you get a little pain, but sometimes people get substantially more pain. If your back's hurting, don't immediately get back surgery. If your knee is hurting, don't immediately get knee surgery. Maybe if you wait, maybe if you do some physical therapy, maybe if you do some swimming, you might be able to avoid it because the surgery will be expensive and it might not produce the outcome that you want, or you might be able to get an outcome as good through waiting and trying to take care of yourself better, would be one example.
All right. I need to apologize to a caller named Jean who called in, and in the heat of the moment, I skipped over her. She waited, and she dropped off. I apologize. And there's also several other emails and one caller we may not get to. But before we do anything else, I want to have Cliff go over some possible answers to this problem. That's the last big section we ought to talk about, and then we'll see what we got in the way of time.
Sure. I want to say, first of all, that we're going to have 4 hours, we're going to talk about solutions or potential solutions in terms of two-hour blocks on January 10th and January 24th. But there are various sort of ways to handle it. On January 10th, we might talk about some sort of less sweeping things, like maybe trying to rely on more coordinated care, maybe so we can get people, as opposed to if they have multiple problems, have them, you know, various practitioners talk to each other and have somebody help them, you know, navigate the more complicated medical system, you know, United States healthcare system, through greater use of coordinated care. Maybe we could get things like more transparency of fees and for outcomes, which will allow patients to get important information before making decisions on their health care. And perhaps also we could, in that January 10th session, talk about the opportunities for medical travel or medical tourism, providing patients to opportunities to seek lower cost care, and care that might be also be, you know, high quality care outside of Alaska. Then on January 24th, we would probably talk more about more sweeping changes to our healthcare system and some potential changes, including the creation of an Alaska State Healthcare Authority, which would be a way of trying to bring various groups of patients together to allow for greater bargaining power versus the providers, so the hospitals, the physicians, the surgeons, the nurse practitioners, or also about single-payer healthcare system, or perhaps more expanded use of government-owned and operated hospitals and clinics that would have physicians, surgeons, nurse practitioners actually paid on salary and not by the traditional fee-for-service method, and explore alternatives to the traditional fee-for-service method of reimbursement of healthcare providers.
You know, Cliff, I was in the middle of looking at some emails, and you may have mentioned this, and I'm not sure that listeners are aware that Medicare right now has changed the way they are going to be reimbursing people from a fee-for-service to a quality-based or outcome-based thing. And that changes the rules of the game considerably. In a fee-for-service model, for example, hospitals, physicians have no real incentive. And we all are humans, and we all respond to incentives, some of us differently than others, I have to admit. But somebody gets sick, they go to the hospital, they get back out, they don't get better, you go back in, and everybody's making money on that. In a quality-based system, there's a lot of money going to have to be try to be saved to keep people from getting back into the hospital. Now, every system can be gamed, and there are arguments and pros and cons. I don't know if you mentioned that as a change.
I mentioned it slightly, but... one factor that relates to something else we talked about before, Doctor, is that Alaska has been relatively slow to see the proposal and adoption of value-based systems of reimbursement.
Why is that? Pardon me. I don't get it. It's okay.
For whatever reason, that's been true, perhaps because there's some legal restrictions on managed care, that have managed care. Which is more common in the lower 48, has been made harder to work here. Perhaps also there have been some cultural factors. And I want to say that my research into this, through all the interviews I've done and the reading I've done, the issue of high health care costs in Alaska has many causes, but they involve both cultural factors and structural factors. And structural factors are, we've got a very expensive medical infrastructure here, which maybe Alaska can't afford. It was sort of built for the days of the big oil money that's harder to pull off now. But the cultural factors include the culture of the patients and the culture of the physicians, surgeons, and hospital executives. And people often want to talk about somebody else's culture and not their own. It's true that some medical providers here seem to have had a belief that Alaska was a place where a lot of money could be made versus some other states or all other states. And maybe some have come here a lot for that purpose, perhaps a minority, but that might be one element there. But culturally, you also pointed out that all around America, but including in our own fair state of Alaska, there's a lot of patients that sort of see themselves as shielded from these costs because of having good insurance through the government or through private companies, right. Sort of have an expectation that they'll be taken care of. And there was a very, when one of my interviews was with Becky Holtberg, the president and CEO of the Alaska State Hospital Nursing Home Association. And she said, Cliff, we want an unlimited supply of a very expensive service for which we are unwilling to pay, quote. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the issues here is that patients think there's a free lunch. And that relates to something else I've talked a lot more about in Alaska, which is the issue of our fiscal problem. In Alaska, generally, people think that the choices are, do you want everything you want in the world, or do you want everything you want in the world plus an extra scoop of ice cream? And there does seem to be that attitude that some patients have, and patients need to take care of themselves better, too, as a big a part of this equation.
We have two callers and five emails in 3 minutes or less than 3 minutes. And I think, unfortunately, I have to ask those individuals to try to participate more, perhaps in the Alaska Common Ground discussions that are upcoming, and ask Cliff to kind of summarize is the way I usually do this. What are the messages we want people to take away from this? The top two or three most important things that you think we ought to take away from today's program.
Number one, take care of yourself.
Okay.
be your first guardian of your own health. Number two, research important expenditures before you make them in healthcare and in other fields. And get second opinions. Don't be afraid to get second opinions before you undergo expensive treatments or surgery. And finally, there's no free lunch. Healthcare and the cost of healthcare in our country and our state involves a lot of trade-offs and choices. And people need to think about those trade-offs and choices clearly. One way they can help do that is to come to our event on Wednesday evening, December 13th, at the 49th State Brewing Company at 717 West 3rd Avenue between 7 p.m. and 9 p.m., and bring some questions themselves. And maybe by going to that and hearing people on the stage, you'll have some additional questions you can ask to try to become better educated about this important topic that is so critical to our future.
Yeah, I would encourage people to get energized and try to get their voice heard and listen to with an open mind the points and suggestions of others to see if we can't come to a rational and realistic, politically feasible answer to what is a serious and really unsustainable problem with healthcare, not only healthcare costs, not only in Alaska, but in the country. Cliff, thanks very much.
Thank you, Doctor.
I think you did a very good job of trying to be unbiased and present a very complex problem, and we could have spent a lot more time on it.
That means a lot coming from you, Doctor, such an experienced observer.
Thank you very much. If you would like, as a listener, to continue the discussion on high health care costs in Alaska, you can join KSKA on Facebook, and you can find that link at our website, which is www.alaskapublic.org, where you can also find the Line 1 archives. And if you'd like to let us know your thoughts and suggestions, our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Next week, Line 1 is going to examine another topic that needs to be understood a lot better, and that's the issue of transgender. We're going to be discussing some social, mental health, and medical issues that face transgender individuals. I encourage you to join us and learn more Monday, December 18th at 2 p.m. Remember, we repeat the same evening at 8 p.m. on FM 91.1, Alaska Public Media. I want to thank Dave Waldron today, who was today's audio engineer, and Eric Bork, who is our web editor. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.